Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everybody. It's Wednesday. Now, you know, Drive Bomb Connection got a special show tonight. We are now connected to our brothers and sisters in the Afro-Latino world. So take a listen. Everybody for joining me. I guess y'all know where this is going tonight. I know y'all got to know where this is going. Woo! We about to enter into another dimension in our people. I have a wonderful guest lined up for you today, everybody. This is a very talented very talented. If y'all go onto the website and onto Facebook or onto the emails you receive and click on your YouTube, you will see how talented tonight we have an individual. And I got to meet this individual. So another friend who's always on our show, Sister Malaika. And when we met up, we got together, and guess what? We was jamming. And for those of you who don't know, she's going to tell you, Dry Bones can play the drums now. Don't fool yourself. I'll make her make that known for y'all. But, yes, thank y'all. It's Wednesday night, man. It's hump night. And I just want to tell everybody, thank y'all for listening. Viewership is going up. We're asking all of you to please just tell others. Just send out a link. You know, we ain't even have to ask you for money. I want to ask you for money, but you know what? You can do one thing and just send the link out. Send it to somebody. Tell them to listen to Dry Bones Connection or www.drybonesconnection.com, and we will give them the latest update information that they can comprehensively understand quickly in this crazy revolving world that we're in. So, and no ado, I'm going to do what we normally do, and we're going to get through and give out homage and to where I always go, and that is to the ancestors. And I like this title tonight, everybody. I hope y'all got a chance to see. The title is Latinega, and Denial of the Nile. I like that. That's from my Latino sister here, who I'll be bringing on shortly. But tonight, again, we told you Dry Bones Connection is going to connect. We got our African connection. Dr. Ngimi. We got now Afro-Latino connection. Besides Malaika, we are going to do something even more dynamic. We're going to start getting into the cultural arts. Like Dr. Booker T, Dr. Kaba said, you got to know the arts, the five arts, the understanding, or the seven liberal arts for those of you who are really in the know. But we're asking everybody tonight, think deeply for what's all going around this world. The Maya, the seven oracles, the seven rays, the seven ladders that you must climb to get the truth. You got to climb. To get the justice, you got to climb. To get the harmony, you must climb. To have balance, you must climb. Reciprocity, you must climb. Order, you must climb. Climb and righteousness, you must climb to those levels. And as a people, we must understand all of us do not have all agreement. I said if we get 60 to 70% or 75%, I'm cool. Whatever other stuff we don't agree with, that's okay, because we agree with the core that we must do something soon. And so hopefully by us listening to that, we'll get the idea. So let me get everything out the way. I did say I was going to do some shout-outs before we get started here, because this is going to be very serious. We got a lot of things going on in the Florida area. I want to thank my guests last week, Brother Sean, the lovely sister, and my good friend Mary Neal, who I've been knowing for a long time, working with the mentally ill, and of course, Lieutenant Dorothy, who's dealing with psycho-analytical people are crazy, for lack of better words. And they doing it. And she's better capable of explaining that to you, because she was firsthand. So we thank all of you who joined in and was. But let me just say this. We got a premiere for those of you who don't know and want to go see this. I think you're going to have to go online quickly and get these tickets only sold online. That's for Hidden Colors 3. It's going to be screened in Miami Gardens Thursday, June 26th. It's actually at 5 p.m., y'all. It's very early. Very early. So try to get there if you can from work. I'm sure it'll be able to be seen after this, but it's always good to come out and support. When that's over, we're going to have a very serious conversation about that movie, because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of talk about the reals and not reals that may be put in that. But nonetheless, we're here tonight to let everybody know that there seems to be a disconnect with all the people. And right now, we have a chance to connect, even with our people and friends that we know. I want to give a shout-out to Irene Kate. Irene Kate is having her fundraiser and her individual election is coming up next month, I think August. So she's in a battle right now, but she needs y'all help. Those of you in the Florida area, I'm going to get this out of the way quickly before I bring my guest on. I think I see her brother online. We need to get to the, she's on the 11th hour, going into the 12th, and they need funds. All elected officials, y'all know they need funds, and they still in ours. Our elected officials, you know they still in ours, but let's put somebody in that we can finally count on who got the same mindset. We talk about it, let's be about it. And she has a website, but I'm going to let him tell you right quickly, brother. I'm going to give you a little bit of time, so get your information in and out. Brother, how you doing? With K Enterprise?
I'm doing wonderful.
Good, brother. How you doing, man? I met you a few times. We know y'all doing the school board elections up there in St. Petersburg, and you guys are doing a wonderful job, and you're all on Facebook, and I see a lot of good things, but tell the people where you at, where you need to be, and how they can help you get there.
All right. Well, my name, first and foremost, is Anthony Cates, and I do want to thank the Dry Bones Connection for allowing me to be on to share my platform, my and my candidate, Irene Cates' platform, for trying to get her elected to Pinellas County School Board, District 7. I am a former candidate of mayor of St. Petersburg, Florida, and she was just my campaign manager, and I'm returning the favor, and I'm her campaign manager. But right now we're looking for funds. We're about $1,100 shy of our qualifying goal to have Irene placed on this year's ballot, which as all funds will be due June 20th noon, which is this Friday noon. So I implore everyone to go to votecates.com and donate. But her platform, she's progressive, she's aggressive. The approach that she has is a miraculous approach. She's a phenomenal person. She's personable, and she really cares about our youth. Our future is in the kids, and our kids, I don't know if y'all can see it, but I see it every day. They're begging for our help. They need our help. And we, with this, having Irene elected on this school board, she will have the automatic in on changing curriculums up and having our children be producers and not consumers. That's our whole platform. It's all over Facebook. Her website is votecates.com. And she's just, we're hitting the streets running hard, but we got to have this qualifying fee to get her elected and into office.
Okay, so that's, those of you in the Florida area, you know, those of you who are out in the listening area, they do have a PayPal set it up. Send what you can in. Those, especially those brothers in Lakeland and brothers in Lake Wells, Tampa, Lehigh County, all y'all who know about this that's been going on, let's put a little bit in there and give, because we need to see somebody representing the kids up there, because I've been up there a few times, and I know it's nothing different. We all going through the same thing. So go ahead, but make your last appeal, and then we'll start out what we're getting ready to do. So go ahead. What else they need to know? Think of a fundraiser also coming up next week. So you want to hit
Yes. I almost forgot about that. We are having a fundraiser June 28th for Miss Kate. It's an old school dance. The tickets are $20. You can pre-purchase. Or at the door, it's $25. All the information is on the website, VoteKate, C as in Charlie, A as in Alpha, T as in Tango, E as in Echo, S as in Sam.com. All the information is there on the Facebook. And we're pretty much trying to get her elected, because we're out in the streets, and all we're hearing is that we need change. And the official that's in there now, if she's not getting the job done, we have felon schools still in our district, five at least that I know offhand for sure, with grades F. These are in all of these schools, the students are predominantly African American, and we can't have this. If we want to have any future, if we want equality amongst all children, then we have to get this young lady elected into office, because her hands-on approach is going to change many lives. Many lives.
That's right, bro. All right, brother. We'll be in touch, of course. So y'all heard it. I thank you, man. So appreciate y'all. And tell her she's gonna get on.
Thank you for having me on, brother.
No problem, bro. Like I said for y'all, that's what we have to do. We've been saying this. Give something. 10, 5. If y'all out there listening, I know you're listening, because call. I see the numbers on the board. People listening. So if you hear this, download it. Do that. you know, this is why we are losing, because we don't give to what we need to. So without further ado, here's another sister. I'm going to bring her on in here because we met, like I said. Sister, you out there? Umalani?
Me? Yes, I'm right here. Can you hear me?
All right. Yeah, I hear you well. Let me just say before I start, let me just give y'all what's going on here. This sister here is an author, a poet, musician. I mean, I had no idea what I was having in my midst when we were jamming. I was like, wow. So they came up with an idea that I guess was brought to their heart called Latte Negra. Her and some sister, what she'd be explaining. I'm just going to go briefly so y'all get an idea. And they're going to talk about the path they took in America. And so without further ado, in dealing with their Latino and black features, and I mean it, this sister was on the news channel here in Miami, Channel 6, part of the cultural explosion that they're doing here. Because we're basically Latin America down here in Miami, if y'all don't know that. It's a multicultural location. And we don't really connect, but with this type of sister here, who know our history, who knew what's going on, she has songs. I mean, you should hear. I got it all on YouTube, y'all. So go down there and look at these things, and then she's going to explain everything else. Without further ado, my sister, my friend, Sister Umalani, how you feel, sister? Good to hear you today. How you doing?
I'm feeling lovely. Hope you are, too.
Yes, I am. I am. Go ahead. I want you to explain to us, well, what made you, and this is a documentary, if you do not know this, everybody, what made you come up with this concept, Latin Negras, the denial of the Nile?
Well, first I have to make sure everybody knows that that is not my original word. There's a woman by the name Martha Cruz Jansen, who is also part of the Latin Negras documentary. And she wrote an article about Latinegras years and years ago. I found it as a child because I was having, you know, struggles dealing with, you know, different communities with my own identity. And I had an aunt who gave me this book called Down These Mean Streets by a man named Piri Tomas, where he was talking about being a person who is phenotypically black, meaning visually black, lived in the apartheid system in America that they called segregation. So that's how he dealt with his struggle. And that helped me to understand my identity and the complexity of what makes us, one, not understand our connection as a people. And when I say as a people, I mean us black people, us people of color, us, you know, brown and black people all over the world.
Right.
And it also explains some of our confusions and conflicts and how we're torn within ourselves. That book also led me to Latinegras, the article, and I fell in love with that work ever since that time. And all throughout school, I wrote things based on that, and then I got the idea to do the documentary. To be honest, I didn't want to talk about it, because sometimes identity is a painful thing. I was lucky to have a lot of great mentors who told me this is a story that must be told. And even if it is painful, my pain can help another young sister, young brother, somebody, you know, who also has struggled loving the skin they're in. So that's why I call it Latinegras, love the skin you're in.
Now, let me ask you this. Now, but though, I'm going to say some things. I want you to just piggyback on what I'm about to say. Okay, now Latin, Negro means black Latin. And in Latin America, most people do not want to admit that the biggest concentration of our people is in the South America, Brazil and so forth, and things like that. And just for people who know that, when you put Afro in front of your name, Afro-Cuban, Afro-Latin, Afro-Puerto Rican, it automatically connects you to Africa, period.
Mm-hmm.
Without any kind. What's the disconnection that you have, being that you speak, really, you speak, what, Spanish, of course?
Mm-hmm. So you mean what is my disconnection with identity, or what do you mean?
I mean, what was the disconnection that you were having, especially, I mean, you were around a lot of black people. What when you got here, what was the language?
It wasn't language. I'm originally from New York, and I'm also, I guess you could call it, mixed race. And my parents, when they got together, they decided that they would raise us as humans, you know, like no color, no concept of whatever. But we live in a world that understands, well, not even understands color, but that recognizes color, that recognizes difference. Unfortunately, difference is seen as a deficiency, but we weren't taught that in home. So going out in the world, my father, who taught history, and my mother taught English, my father instilled a sense of black pride in me. I don't know if it is ironic because my father is the one that is, well, he's Filipino and Hispanic too, but and my mother is too, but my father is the one who looks, you know, as of another race. Anyway, he was the one who told me. Yeah.
But let me ask you something. Puerto Rican?
Yes.
What are we talking? New York. Okay, go ahead.
And Filipino.
Oh, okay. I am Filipino.
Yeah. So my father was the one who told me to just be pro-black, everything. And so if I looked at myself, I thought I looked like the Ebony Queen, you know? Like, I wasn't confused about my blackness. And then we moved to North Carolina where people looking at my dad and they calling him Mexican, they calling me Mexican. They don't understand, you know, with the people who I was around, they didn't understand my culture. How can a person who is black also be speaking Spanish or also have all of these different identities and things like that? And people would pull my hair. They would call me zebra child. It was terrible because I'm like, why don't they see that I am the same as them? You know, like, why?
Well, okay,
why
now, hold on. Now, when you say they was doing this, mm-hmm. you went to what, North Carolina?
I lived in North Carolina at that time.
Right now, was this black people, black American, or African American? So
it was African American.
Okay, so African. Okay. So African-American in South Carolina, when you came, they started to pick on you and call you Mexican based on the fact you spoke Spanish.
Yeah, and then, you know, because of how my family looks, you know, they would ask me, am I black or white? Because, you know, they didn't have, like, a whole lot of diversity at that time. And anything that wasn't blonde hair and blue eyes, Caucasian, was considered black, you know. And it changed a bit, but not too much. So then there was that. Then I came from North Carolina. I lived other places, but then I moved to Miami. And that was a completely different story where I did see Latinegros and Latinegras like myself, but I was treated very badly by my own Hispanic community. I encountered a lot of racism, so much to the point I didn't want to hear any salsa music. I didn't want to be involved in my culture. So I just said, forget all of that. I am African American. But nobody was buying that, you know. Like I would say, I'm African American, and people would say, and what? Nah.
No, but you know,
my last name is Spanish.
Mm-hmm. Now, when I met you, I can say personally that, to me, if you did not speak, I would thought you just a black woman, black lady, black sister here. Would not have thought nobody because you got the same look. Now, when you started talking, then for all you who don't know, tell sister, we was jamming, wasn't we? And she does, she plays the drum,
yeah,
and
we
she sings. Oh, we had a good time. And she sings in Spanish, so she was saying the words real good. And then we had Malika there, who was just as talented. And I'm going to say this, you know, it was a good connection. To understand that, but when you started telling me about the problems that you exceed, I can also say that Afro-Haitians, not just the French Haitians, but the Haitians that are dark complexed and everything, not the ones that are mulatto in case, they too was treated bad when I got here, just by them, their different apparel, how they dress. They were very colorful. They would be called, oh, you're wearing Haitian clothes. And so I've seen that myself. Now, in New York, in the area we came from, you don't really have that because Puerto Ricans were pretty much around us most of our schooling. But when you get down here or you get into other parts, as you say, and you've been all over the place, tell them a little bit about your background with this music because you was up for, and we don't want to play this short. One of your songs up for a music award?
Well, I got selected I was a finalist in the Grammy Showcase last year. My song No Soy Para Ti and Rebellious Reggae, which I sent to you. I hope you'll be playing for the people soon.
Yes,
but
I will be playing.
Yeah, so I'm heavily involved in Grammy. I go to, the Billboard Latino events and things like that. So I'm serious about my art. I love music. But then I'm also serious about being a conscious sister and knowing who I am in this world so that as I climb forward, that those things hold me together.
Exactly. Now, I looked at some of the clips, and I hope all you check out the clips that they do have beautiful background. And when you think about it, everybody, I seen one, and y'all often know about the Amish people being here in Mexico, but there's Mexicans right now. If you go to Black Mexico, because of doing the research I was doing, I was just looking at all I was not even surprised that they were looking just like the brothers and sisters. But, y'all, I want y'all to hear this. They were just the way we were, sitting under the tree, playing cards, everything. I mean, if you didn't know where you was at, you would have swore you was in somewhere, Fort Lauderdale, Miami, somewhere, South Carolina. That's the way it looked. But here was the problem. And I know this is... They are extremely poor. Extremely. These black countries in these Latin countries are extremely poor. And I know you've been to a few. Which one were you at when y'all did the awards, when y'all did some of the documentary for the film?
The video that is done outside of the United States is in Puerto Rico.
Okay. And you were shooting that where? Where was that shot at?
Mostly in Mayagüez. That's where my ancestry is. But also I did some other parts in all throughout. We went to this cave called Cueva de los Indios, and that's in a place called Arecibo in Puerto Rico. And this cave is interesting because it's beautiful, gorgeous, beautiful water, beautiful cliffs. But then there's this one drop in the back of the cave. And this is a place where Africans and indigenous people would jump into the water to escape the Europeans who were trying to entrap them. And we have a lot of shared history. That's why I'm saying, you say you look at me and I look like a regular black girl. Guess what? I am. Because there is a reason why. There is a reason why we are called black in the first place. And if we start with that, or African or whatever terminology we want to use, if we start with that, then we understand our identity in a different way. If we know about the Berlin Conference that they had, you see this famous picture of Cecil Rhodes with his legs spread out and his arms spread out, and he said that he wanted to plant red flags all over Africa from Cape Town to Cairo. Before then, African people had traveled all around the world. In fact, African people were so revered in their travel around the world that old Roman coins show the black mahout. I don't know if you know about that, but that was the elephant trainer. That's where you get the Habshis in the cities, at the African Indians who are living in India. We have been traveling around the world since the world has been round. But at this conference, in 1899 through 1901, the Berlin Conference is what it's called. That is when the Europeans met, a council of Europeans met, so they could decide how they would create borders around the continent to suit their own needs. So that's the reason why you could have two people who might be Wolof people, for example, Senegalese and Ghanaian, from the same tribe, right? But because there's a borderland, an artificial border that was drawn by somebody else, these people see themselves as different people. In Nigeria, there was a big war between the Morakeke people and the people from Ife Town, Yoruba people, because they had a historical beef, but politically they had to join together because that's how the line was drawn by the Europeans. Now, we could take that with Africa, but when we expand and move into the world, those borders and boundaries have been drawn globally. So that's the reason why we'll have two Mandingos, one live in Puerto Rico, one live in Dominican Republic, and they'll see themselves as two different people because of these artificial boundaries and lines that have been drawn to make you see your brother as your enemy, as your difference, as your whatever. So that's the reason why I could be in a North Carolina, and maybe genetically I'm the same African as you, but because my ancestry, some of them come from Spain, some of them come from Africa, some of them come from Asia, and my last name, my land base, is a different place. We are constructed to believe we are different people.
Mm-hmm.
And that is where the seed begins.
No, it begins for sure because, like I said before, this is why we call it dry bones. Actually, I like to tell people, you know, and I think you heard me talking, and I know we talked when you was here. I like to tell people a lot of what's happening is we have been given language barriers as well. Most of us are very much into the language that we speak. That's why they were acting towards you that way in South Carolina. They speak a different type of English. And even though the Jamaicans also speak English, they come from a perspective of the Queen's English. You heard people say, oh, I speak the Queen's English.
Yeah.
So you can see the division has been placed in us from that conference. And I think we need to have a study. Now, I know you're heavily into, I want to start bringing our friend in, but I got to get you to give some more information on some stuff. These conferences, I think we got to start our own African, Latino, American conference here in Miami. To gather people together to brainstorm how, because that conference needs to be the premise. The reason why I say that, I get a lot of questions on what can we do, how can we do, and what those people did, you can back me up on it, they went to that room, all the nations of Europe was at war, y'all, we said this a bunch of times, they were at war with each other, they couldn't stand each other, they were killing each other worse than they can kill you, they were skinning each other, every you name it, they were doing. But when they looked at their generation and said, we got to have survival. We need land. They went to that conference and said, Spain, you get this. Portugal, you get this. Italy, you Mussolini, you get this. You over here, you take over this. England, you take over that. South Africa, Dutch, you take over this part. The Zubairs, you take over all the Congo. And when they got out of that conference, they went right back to war. That's how deep this is. They went right back to war, but they kept the agreement to take the land and to take the resources through what is called demarcation. And I like that what you just said. It's about land and barriers that we're going to have to knock some things down. Now, what is your, in your music, I noticed that you you got a very soulful, neo-soul, I experienced to hear hip-hop, rap. You can do a lot of things. What do you see the music doing? To really, it connects us in a lot of ways. I see that as a connection between a lot of us of a different, and it's been a connection for those of us from different backgrounds. Well, how's your experience with music with people?
Well, definitely one thing that connects all of it, as we know, is the drums, you know. I remember reading a quote one time that they could take our drums, they could not take our rhythm. And so in different places, we have reproduced this original sound of the heartbeat in different ways. One big example is Trinidad and Tobago. I used to live in Trinidad and Tobago, and there they had legal restrictions on using the drums. So the people came so ingenuous and were so connected to the music and the beat that they took, I don't know if you know what a Crix box is, but Crix is a type of crackers, and they used to sell them in a metal tin, and they burned out, you know, and made a hollow in it and used water and fire. And that is where the steel pan came from, so that the drum with the skin was illegal, but they made up their own drum that now is one of the most famous instruments in the world, the steel pan.
The pan drum. The steel pan. I don't, I've been around them. They got them here. Believe me, I'm well connected to some Trinidadian people. Yes. And they will make they play that. They get their little machines and they buff out them angles and make. Yeah, you're absolutely correct. Now that's something we got to study too, sister. And those of you, we're gonna start talking about the taking of the drum on America.
Yeah,
seemed to be very crucial and critical because Haiti had just defeated Napoleon with playing drums to let their infantry know when to move and so forth. And when they learned of that, they put on a riot. They took everything we had, and that's how we developed the hand bone, hitting on our body and doing that hand boning because we couldn't do drums at all. So I think that's another thing that, as a group of people, we should study that because that was crucial to the beat of our hearts. And I think when America lost its heart, though, America is the most looked at of all a lot of groups. I think our heart here has been very, very, very cold toward a lot of things that was done to us. What's your view on that? Because a lot of people do tell me they have problems with people. And I'm going to go to the Africans too. But the problems you hear, it has to do with a lot of ignorance of history, don't you think?
Well, yeah, definitely. That is one of the most dangerous tools. You can take away a person's house or clothes or material possessions, but knowledge is something that is difficult to take away, you know, or replace. So what we don't know can hurt us, and that's part of the problem there. But bit by bit, you know, we learn more about each other and what has created our social condition in today's time.
Now, when to get back to people don't realize how good this movie gonna be. you was on Channel 6 down here in Miami. What was that festival about?
That one was a cultural arts festival, Carib Arts Festival, and I was doing my music, and I always combine it. I did a little hip hop and reggae, and then I shut it down with the salsa music. So I try to expose us or everybody, you know, to a collection of our music and artistic expression.
Let me ask you, because you've been here in Miami, and everybody who's never been to Miami, let me tell you, it's a whole different vibe because of so many people. You know, there is what I consider a kind of a racial issue because it seems to be like mainly lighter or white Spanish individuals seem to get kind of more of a preferential treatment here. And I know that they are even kind of mean, like you say, toward their own Spanish brethren, even they speak history. Why do you think that? Because, you know, we watch novellas here. I don't know if y'all ever watch a novella, everybody, but some of these soap operas in Spanish, let me tell y'all something. They got slavery. Am I making that up, sister?
Nope.
I'm telling y'all, if y'all from other parts of the country, except probably Texas, these soap operas down here is very, very interesting, to say the least. And they show them with the black woman in the colonial times. What's your take on that? Is that, you know, that seems to be very deep.
There was a man by the name of Antonio Benitez Rojo. Let me preface this stuff so you all know. I'm not just an artist, but I also got a degree from Cornell. So, and I did my thesis on this very thing, Creolization, African identity. What does it mean to be African? So that's what I wrote about. But Benitez Rojo wrote this book, and it was called Repeating Islands. And he was saying what to find in the Caribbean, and not just there, but other places too, is repetition of the same thing. We suffer from that same thing, which is colonialism, which is, and this is African people, it's indigenous people all over the world that we have suffered at the same hands. One thing that is different between the United States and Latin America, though, is how the racial system was structured. In the United States, it was one drop of black blood makes you black. So it is a penalization of blackness. In Latin America, however, privilege was given to whiteness so that the whiter you were, the more acceptable the more, you know, praise or honor that you were given. And you can become, you know, more and more and more not black. One drop of anybody else's blood makes you not black anymore. And this was so serious that back in the 18th century, they would give stipends to families who would intermarry. And they would also have a license that people could get called Gracias al Sacar, which means thanks for taking me out, where you could carry a license, a certificate, that meant that you were no longer considered of the black race. You became a social non-black. So this
right.
strata exists until today. It's a caste system.
Well, and I, again, if you ever, I don't think you, maybe you have heard, but I tell people the race game came in the 1700s by Blumenbach. And I mentioned it last week, y'all, when I did government. It's called a pygmictocracy, governed by skin color. And they thought this out very well because, again, the mixture of the races always going to create a darker, you know, a darker, I say creation, because that's what we are. We create when we have children. So they are very much aware of that. Now, you tell me, because you see it all the time, and especially now that this World Cup is going on, I see some things going on. They throw bananas at the soccer players and so forth. And this is done in the Latin world. What's your take on that?
It's the same stuff. I mean, that's really exactly what it is. Racism, all those things still exist. This idea of white privilege. I just got back from Puerto Rico, and going into every town where there's a big old Columbus statue erected in the center of the city, you know, paying homage to the biggest rapist, the biggest liar, the biggest deceiver, where we're still calling ourselves West Indians, calling Native people Indians, when this man was lost. But we live in the lie, and we continue to build our lives around that lie. So that's
right.
what's wrong with these people. They got it confused. And this is something that has been built historically.
Now, you know, what's y'all view on black America? Because I know y'all got, I know, because I hear, what is yours? Because, you know, even though they might have picked on you, I know they say some things. What's their view? I know they say some things about us. What's their view on us? Give us the best you can and the best rated person you can.
I don't know. You hear a lot of different things. Once again, it's this idea of how we all have been separated. On one side, you know, you got people who feel like one or the other feels like they're better than the other. Or one may
right.
look down on the other and see them as inferior. I've been in places, you know, and at first I got that racist look or, you know, that racist attitude. And then I speak Spanish. Sometimes people talk to you differently. I went one time to get my nails done, and the lady asked me who did my hair. And then she said, oh, you see those black people over there? Now she was black like me, and I'm thinking, which one, you or me? But she was talking about somebody else, you know, that the confusion, the condition, the brainwashing that we have been through makes us not see ourselves as black. But we are all black, you know?
Yeah, and making the condition
we are
worse.
Yeah, we are the Yoruba,
now,
we are the Mandinga, that's us.
And I've seen that song that I was playing, I think it was Teddy Cruz, don't they say Shango on that song?
Oh, she's saying that that life is like a carnival, like all these people who don't think that anything is going to change for you, that your situation is always going to be the same, don't see it like that, because there's always room for something to be different. So that's what she was thinking about.
And does she say Shango in that at all? No Shango? Because somebody told
no,
me.
No, not
in that. Okay. She used to sing a lot of those songs, and you tell me, I always ask you, what's the lyrics they're saying? Sometimes the lyrics be saying, they be talking about cutting sugar cane and, like, mommy, blah, 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 blah. I'm running from this black man. And I'm like, wow, is color color seems to be a very strong condition in the Latin world, as well as hair. So basically, you can see, all you listen, you can see how they use the same technique. It's the same technique being used on each and every one of them. That's why I say we're going to have a conference. We're going to have a different type of y'all. We're going to have to, because I want people to know this while we're talking. Mexico, a long time ago, if y'all don't know this, made a treaty that told us that we can move there. So Black America,
yep, sure you
can come move here. But we being who we were at that time, didn't even want to do that. So see, these connections, these hands were given to us, y'all, at the earliest time. And yet we didn't understand it. But I think it's a new time, and we're going to have to start taking on these hands that are right. Because I think the only thing I can say for all of us is we are in this boat together now. America is, and I hope you tell me what you think. I see Latin America, who is highly Catholic, seems to be a little more, even more, and brainwashed, because they believe in the Pope heavily. I mean, it's like they're very into what the Pope say. What's your take on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, when you were saying that, and that's true what you said about Mexico. That's one of the places I used to live. But the other thing is another community we are contention with sometimes is the indigenous community. And it was us who lived together, the Maroons, and in Spanish we call it Cimarron. You know, we all fled together, and we were part of one big community. And in today's time, I have sometimes seen indigenous people, especially when you see someone who looks phenotypically black, claiming indigenous ancestry. And there's some division sometimes, and that's not a good thing. But, yeah, the going back to your question about the Pope and all of that, that has been one of the most hegemonic vehicles that has been used since, you know, way back. If you go to places like Africa, you'll have, and I lived in Africa too, you'll have, like in Nigeria, it'll be a place that looks really, really poor. And in the middle of the poverty, like an oasis, you'll see a big old church, pristine. I mean, like gold lined and all of that. And when you hear stories about what goes on in there, and it's not just the physical things that go in there, but the psychological abuse. I don't know if you've seen the movie Sankofa. Came out years ago.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, Haile Gerima.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, those movies used to be at one time they have a lot of movies. But I like the fact, and I'm gonna bring our good friend. Y'all stay into the cultural aspect, and I'm gonna bring our good friend in Malaki, because she definitely stays in the culture aspect. And I think that does a lot that we're gonna have to start utilizing some of these arts to really come together on different levels, because unfortunately, with what I'm seeing to come, I don't want to talk to some of the Latin people myself. And I mean, I'm going to tell you like I mean Afro-Latino community first, because I want them to see that I'm going to be able to show them the type of treatment that happened here that made us so not really understanding them as well, and them not understanding us, because it is a division. Now, Africa. Let's go there before we bring in, because we're still at the top of the hour, 10 o'clock, we'll take some calls and we'll bring some more in, but I'm enjoying this, because we got to go to Africa, because I see in the now and the now, and that's the motherland. You notice the same thing goes on, and like I say, in Africa, how they happen. But have you noticed that it's been a trend all over the Latin world and Africa for them to start, well, we used to do this in Black America in the 40s and 50s, bleaching. They're bleaching their skin at an all-time level in these countries. Explain that.
I know I keep giving the same answer, but seriously, stuff goes
You've
back.
Seen it.
Yeah, this is like some old Willie Lynch type of thing and you know who I'm talking about, Willie Lynch, with the divide and conquer, separate the light from the dark. Etc.
Yeah.
You know, this whole privilege being given to light skin, In my documentary, I use a few clips from this old Mexican film, and there's a little girl who puts white cream on her skin, and she says, she goes into her mother, who is white and is ashamed of having a black child. She goes and tries to hug her mother and say, maybe now that my face is painted white, you'll love me. And the mother hugs and kisses her, and she says, now my mom loves me because I'm white. So it is a real sickness that, that is the standard that the world has set, that standard that the epitome of beautiful is that long silky hair, white skin, and very fine Nordic features. Not even European, because Europeans look different, you know, depending on where you are, but like a fine, thin nose, thin body, no shape.
You just said something, and I'm going to click on. You said Nordic. And I want everybody to understand that. Now, we had a lot of conversation the other day, and I was talking to some people at the event where Brother Cabo, Booker T. Coleman, for those who don't know, he did an event up here in Fort Lauderdale at the, you're probably familiar with the museum, Old Dillard High School, now turned to. It was so strange because I told him, I said, Germany, Nordic, this is a very strange dichotomy. And then we were talking about educating kids. Now, everybody know this. We all teach our kids to say A-E-I-O-U. I want y'all, I'm going to bring Sister Akila in. Akila, please, if you out there listening, I see you. Look up A-E-R-O-U, and I want you to tell the listening audience what that is, and you're going to be shocked, everybody, because I learned it from a very good sister. She's, I can't think of her name right at the moment, but she was one of the best out there, Sister Bay. Don't come to me a little bit. Yana Bay, I might be wrong, but does a wonderful thing on this thing, and I looked into it, it's even deeper than you can imagine what it is. And now we teach our kids in English now. This is mostly in English. Those are the vowels. You know that, right, sister? Those are the vowels that we teach little kids. And you mentioned Nordic. And you mentioned Nordic. I'm gonna show you how all that comes together, because they are giving you a Nordic image only as to be the epitome of beauty, because she's right. The more the screwing up in Africa and in Europe, and she just mentioned that we were all over the earth, so you know we was having sex. So we were lighting up and that. Let me bring in her for a minute, see if she got that. And then we're going to go carry on. Sister, you got that information I asked? You out there? You listening? You may not be able to do it. I thought you was near your computer.
Yes, drive on.
You seen it? You got it for me?
Did you say A-E-R-U? I'm trying to look it up now.
I want you to look up
A-E-R-U?
A-E-R-O-U, you know, the vowels. A-E-R-O-U, like, you know, A-E-R-O-U. And sometimes tell them when you see the anacronym, I want you to read the anacronym for the people so they can see how deep this is. It just says something. So y'all know how deep this rabbit hole goes. So did you get it? Let me know when you get it. And,
okay.
We'll be going into Sister Malika in a few minutes, and we're going to get everybody into the conversation about this, because I know there's always a way we can do things. I want to have a summit as well where we show each and every of the cultures the same thing. When she said bleaching our skin, I want me to go and I want our group to show them the same thing. This is what they had us doing. So they can say, I don't think people ever seen together the strategy together. Like somebody will show England, blacks in Europe, somebody will show, and to show that these different programs have been used against us, I think that might wake up a lot of people to say, oh my goodness, they have used it, because I don't think we really, you got it, sister?
But you know what? We used to. Because if you look back historically, you know who was doing the Black Power movement? And Stokely Carmichael, Kwame Ture is a Trinidadian. A lot of these people, Marcus Garvey, Jamaican. So Arturo Schomburg, who also did Negro Digs Up His Best.
Puerto Rican.
Puerto Rico.
Arthur Schomburg. That's right.
We all used to come together. It's just in contemporary times, Will has
right.
been thrown in our path, so we forget that we are this, you know, one people.
That's why I want to tell people, because a lot of what you just said, A.J. Rogers, some of the earlier individuals are off these, came right off these islands, and people don't realize that, but they integrated through us because of the look. They knew we looked like them, so they didn't have a problem being around us. And we didn't have a problem being around them, and we were under the same conditions. You got it, Sister Keila? You found it?
I'm still looking. I found something. I just want to confirm it first.
I was going to say it's Austria. It should be Austria. It's going to be an acronym. I want people to hear this because this is serious. If you can't find it, I have to go get it. But it's an acronym, y'all, and it means...
I think it's Austria, S... Emperor Orpi Universal of Austria to govern all the world.
That's it. Now, that is what we've been saying in the vowels of these words, y'all. A-E-I-U is vowels. And you put them into the words, it creates a spell effect. And it says, Austria will rule the world. That's what that acronym means. That acronym means Austria, Germany. The same people that created our school system, the Prussia, Germany. One day we're going to get into this, and I'm going to show y'all that we have to break this spell. Many of the people in the 60s, and many of you who are of that age, like as myself, we know that they killed more individuals in the 60s than at any time. At any time. They killed almost everybody. You name it, Africa to here. And it was a reason why, because of what the sister we were all talking about. They've seen a unification. And in order for us to have that again, we're going to have this no fear of getting together. Because they know if this happens, what we're talking about. It changed the dynamic. Now, we got to reach these young brothers and sisters, because I'm going to be honest with you. The spell is working more than y'all imagine. Because of the universal movement and shifts of the Earth and moon and the sun and the children are changing. Now, I'm going to get a little heavy before we bring everybody in so y'all know where we're going. Our DNA, which is the divine nature of atom. That's why I'm going into what the sister said, the now. I'm going to talk about the now for a minute. Sister, you ain't going to be denied of the now tonight. We have the divine nature of atom. I gave y'all the 666, six electrons, six protons, six neutrons. That's who 666 is. It is the coming of man. They are seen... Microbiological cells are transforming. That's why you see so many kids missing. They are DNA testing and they are seeing the change. We are going to have our second blood moon will be coming, everybody. You think it's a joke? Play with it. You have the first one already, and that's when, if you go on and do what I'm telling you about, looking up, if you're into what you claim to be into, y'all, as above, so below, then you should be studying astrological information such as sun ray, and Dutch Scent is one of the best out there to show y'all this, and he is most feared. He even cut off his YouTube sometimes because it's kicking off so much power, y'all. It's unbelievable. It's unbelievable. We need to understand that they are doing some unbelievable things. Africa is under siege. You go to www.driveonsconnection.com, you will see Africa now has the Ebola virus. It's at Senegal, and they will not let them in Guinea. The UN is blocking the borders off. This is why I say we best to get together in the West here as fast as possible. I want you to also know that they are starting a war that is no need. Obama knew that he was going back in there. You guys all was listening that, oh, no, he's going to bring the troops home. No, he is not. They are going to create a fake war. Listen careful, because I'm talking to my brothers and sisters, because we are going to have to bond together. If we do not bond together, you will not understand what's about to come on America. They are going to create this war because all the resources are about to be eaten up until they have some complete control. And I'm saying this because our own people, who are black, are in Rwanda. I got the names here. Y'all need to look this up. Think I'm playing. Joseph and Kimba, Paul Kamun. They are going to trigger a Rwanda war as well. All the troops are surrounding Nigeria, and they are going for the resources, which creates coltan. Dr. Ngeni gave me this message. I will definitely tell him. He know I said it. They are about to take over the coltan. Y'all remember that movie, Avatar, when they wanted that metal out that tree? Well, they were showing you what they was about to do. Now, I want all y'all to go to, when you finish this show tonight, go to Weapons Magazine or go to DARPA. That's D-A-R-P-R-A, DARPA. It will show you the latest technology of police warfare. They had did it and used it. I hope y'all was paying. See, y'all so busy watching. See, our black brothers and sisters in Brazil and indigenous are catching hell right now while we watch some soccer games. The Haitians who are African, are being put in slave camps to build stadiums. Look this up. Then, they have in the rainforest, which they should not have done, they went in the middle, I hope y'all take care, into a place where it's heavy populated with oxidized trees, and put a stadium that does nothing when it's all gone. And guess what they plan to do, everybody? It's been found out. Y'all look this up to make sure I'm telling y'all the truth. It's going to be a prison. It's going to be a prison. Look it up. It's going to be on Wall Street. The investors are sitting there in Brazil watching their new cities while they have killed almost a couple thousand people. 500 of them, 5,000 have been eliminated from their land home. That's Agenda 21. This is what's happening to our African people, baby, sisters, brothers. We have to now start thinking about what's really going on here in the West while we still have some sanity. Now, I'm going to open up the mics, and we're going to keep this sister on, because this sister going to do a little poetry, I hope, for us, because she's a conscious. She does. Y'all have to, if y'all do not understand, go look at her on Facebook and on YouTube. Her name is Lani, I love that name, O-M-I-L-A-N-I, and I like the word OM, because when you do OM, OM is three. OM is the power. That's what you see when you go through electricity. OM. That's a powerful name, sister. Now,
hey.
The sister said Austria will rule again. So all you go later on, look up A-E-I-O-U, because you've been saying the spell since you was a little kid, including myself, but I broke it by knowing it now. The spell tells you to bow down to the Austrian Empire through synoptic meditation of words. It's called Grimatia. They put together a numerical spell through letters. Look it up. I'm not playing with it. It's for real. Those of you who don't understand what spiritual means, it means you do rituals. And people say I was crazy. When they did the moon turn black, I was out there praying with it. Because the female principle must be released now. I told you, Mars had hit the moon. The moon had hit the sun. The sun hit the moon, made it red. Reflection off of Mars. It means the universe is at war. She is menstruating. And they are about to pour on what's above, so below. Now you understand? Now, without further ado, my sister, who brought this about, I got to bring her on. Don't be laughing either when I put you on this phone. But she's a joyful sister. What's up, Sister Malika? How you feel?
I'm fine, and yourself? I'm very happy that you... Yes, I'm very happy that you brought Sister Omilani. Omilani, goodness gracious, you know a lot. And I met Omilani. I was able to meet Omilani actually when she was performing at a poetry spot that I used to go to attend to every Friday called Speak. And I saw her up there. I was like, wow, this sister, she really has a Billie Holiday voice about her, you know. And one time she came in with her African attire, and it was just so beautiful, you know, so special to see her. She's a very humble sister. She's filled with talent. And I'm very happy that you brought her into the show because, you know, a lot of African Americans have a misconception also about, you know, this thing about, you know, Hispanic, you know, the not being or not having perhaps that African that we do have, you know. So, you know, I'm glad that you brought her along so that she can, you know. Yeah.
And tell everybody.
Yeah.
Tell everybody. We were jamming. You was playing the cowbell.
Yep.
Melania was playing the drum. And I was playing the whole drum. But we jamming.
Yeah, we had a great time.
I had a really, really awesome, great time.
Yeah. You would say that. We connected through music, and I tell everybody that was the first connection. But I want us to connect now with others, because let me just say this. You always in cultural events here in Miami.
And Christians try to come with me up and over. I like to go up the street. I'll start grandma meeting.
Yes.
And so
I'm always in cultural events. Yes.
And so we want people to realize that we got to start doing a connection of ideology. I think we all have some connection with each other. I just don't think that economies make us hate each other, because we have a tendency to see different people coming here to America and seem to be getting over. Y'all experienced that. I mean, you have, even y'all probably say, oh, they getting over because they getting all the money. I'm a little afraid with that concept because of the fact that so many people are coming. You kind of have to now say we need to really understand each other before too many people come from the immigration bill, and we will just be bombarded with people that we can't control ideology-wise, and then maybe problems will stem from that. What's your take on that?
First of all, I wanna thank you, Dry Bones, for being an African American who's very open-minded. And wants to, you know, to bring about truth and gather us together, you know. And yes, if we would have conferences, like the conferences that I go to that teach me about my own country. Like the other days I went to a conference that had to deal with the Cuban music and the Dominican music, how we collaborated. And I didn't even know this. And, you know, Sister Omilani was speaking about something in reference to, you know, how in the Latin countries, it's something, it's incredible because of the colonization. They say that, you know, they have a Spanish saying that says, cada oveja con su pareja. You know, my mother, unfortunately, she passed. I love her. But she was racist. And towards the end of her lifespan, she even went as far as to telling me that we had more. And which I'm glad that she did, because then I understood why is it my love for the Moors that is in my blood. And she used to say that a lot. She used to say, muchacha, cada oveja con su pareja. Oh, if I would tell her, Mom, I'm sorry, but I love black men. Tell me, adelanta la raza, which means you know, proceed the race forward. You know, if you're with a black man, you're going backward. And these things are mind-boggling to me, to my spirit being. So, and then when a sister in the documentary, well, Milani's documentary reunion, I forgot her name, and I'm sorry for that, but she said something very interesting. She said that in the Latin countries, the white goes up, while when you come to the States, it goes down, something to that matter. So,
right.
So it's something where it's still eugenics, and it's still
right.
White supremacy, and that is what is the underlining. That is what is the underlining of the barriers that we have. That sneaky white supremacy that's in there, you know. And that's what we need to break. And we can break it through education, like with Omilani's great documentary, and also with your Blog Talk show, brother. Could be broken. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I think a lot of y'all are doing things. That's why I tell people there are people doing things so without no fanfare. And they don't really get exposed, but they're doing it. And then that's when we come across it. Wow, you know, I got a brother who's doing it. I got a sister doing that. And I think we're going to have to start embracing these people immediately upon helping them. Now, Neely Fuller, I tell people all the time, I kind of understood where he was coming from. I hope y'all listen carefully. Neely Fuller, for all of you don't know, he is a very brilliant, I won't say psychologist, but he is very dealing with the mind and racism. He put a book out about the strategy against white supremacy, comprehensive strategy against white supremacy. And I'm probably saying it wrong, but go on the website, he's there, Neely Fuller. And he said that we should flee from black people who are not productive, meaning that they will cause us problems. Now, I'm saying that when you have people who are productive and y'all can come in harmony with each other, that's the connection I'm talking about, y'all. When you can coexist with each other and move forward. If you are having problems with each other, where I'm calling you names because you look like me, or I'm like, you know, who the hell is you? You know, where you from? Go clean yourself up. You know, making jokes. Now, I've seen this on buses, so I know it happens. It's been a little bit different now as time's gone on, but it's still a new type of racism in these cities. We might have to start, and y'all tell me if I'm right or wrong, we might have to start looking at some of the alternatives that's out there, which is media, blog talks, and trying to create our own little political, and I don't even like to use parties, but our own little movement, because right now, we had a time frame where they're cutting things, y'all. I'm talking practical. I don't want to give this illusion. They're cutting so many things, and I'm trying to show y'all that this is where we used to coexist together, like the sister said, in these cities, or in these countries where they used to be together. We're going to have to start that right now in the next 5 to 10 years, y'all. We're going to have to start transforming ourselves into a different system. How is it that those Latin countries, and you can tell me in line, can last longer? They're poorer than us. Some of these black communities in these Latin countries are very poor. How do you see them existing because of the fact? Are they bartering? They don't have money, so what are they doing?
It's really sad that one of the problems that we've had throughout time is that you don't feel the pressure until your back is against the wall. You see, we have this illusion now of all this diversity and all of this stuff that people are talking about, that because we have a few black millionaires and billionaires and Dr. Dre just sold Beats, we got a falsified sense that we have overcome, and we've become very individualistic. In a lot of the countries that I've been in the Caribbean or in Latin America, people's backs are still against the wall. So you know, you gotta do what you gotta do. Link with your people. It's still based on the old susu. You know, susu is, you know, you trade or you do. It's still more like the African system. But I do notice things bit by bit are changing in other places too. But that is the problem. You know, in Haiti they did it. In Haiti, Haiti used to make their own type of, you know, like that the products were homegrown and stuff like that. America came in and subsidized and started giving out all these free rations. And forgive me if I'm using the wrong example, but it went something like this, giving out all these rations of rice, free, free, free. So all the people started abandoning the local stuff they were using and trading that for this subsidized rice. Well, once they got everybody hooked on this, then they started charging it, and the markup was, like, ridiculous. And so now the old tradition of growing your own and all the people who were already in the market making their own have been wiped out, and then you have a thirst for something that comes from somewhere else. So
now hold on.
What I'm saying,
Ooh, that's deep what you just said. Oh, that's deep. Now, hold on. Did you hear her, but she said, you know, because there's a lot of talk about from our, over here. I'm trying to show you, we're going to connect you dots from here. That we always say that now. Oh, we got to get land and start growing. I hear you. I know y'all been hearing that all the time. We got to get land. And somebody's music loud. I got to see that. That made me have to take everybody out. So if y'all allow, I can't take the guests out. So I hope it ain't the guests. But there you go.
No.
You see? Not the guests. See, the guests know how to act on the radio. Thank you, baby. Because you've been on real radio. I've seen you on real radio, too, out there. That was in Brooklyn. But back to that, they take the land. Now, they got Haiti, like you just said. Maya, who was a producer. They was a producer. They should supposed to have exported their rice and made their own money.
Mm-hmm.
They end up subsidizing. And this was done by the beloved Clintons, y'all. The beloved Bill Clinton. And see, right now, we still love those Clintons. See, that's what I'm trying to show y'all, the insanity that's going on out here. Why they doing that to Haiti, because we don't see it. Now, she telling something we don't see. I knew about this a while back that they was going to make, you tell me about this, sister, and I want your views about since you've been Haiti. Now, I want people to understand, I love my Haitian brother. Please, everybody know that. You can't help but love them when you're down here. They're beautiful people. But here's the problem. You remember the hurricane, the earthquake that hit Haiti. And some of us was like, wow, that's unreal. Well, some of us had knowledge about them able to create earthquakes. Now, is it my fault because I dug deep to find out that there was a weather machine or weather type of instrument that can take out there and shoot it down. Now, I would never have thought this my damn self. But you see, okay, I hope I'm back. Every time I say something deep, I get cut. Well, when we found out that this was possible to be done, an earthquake, I went and found out through other intelligence people telling me that one of the practice fields was around Haiti and the Dominican Republic. Because you know the Dominican Republic did not have any problems at all. Not at all. They had not one problem other than a rush of people moving over there. They damaged Haiti. And back when I was telling people from the website, driveonconnect.com, I found out somebody gave me the information. They said they was building resorts in Haiti for these cruise ships to come and dock there and go back to the destination. The Royal Caribbean, all of them was involved. I said, my man, this is unreal. Click the names. The Clintons was and the Bush family were all, remember that when Bush, you remember Sister Umulani when Bush and the Clinton and all of them went to Haiti as if they were going to help?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's when they made those deals, and now they got the people working. Now, here's the sad part. You tell me, isn't it strange? I've been telling my Haitians, they act like I'm crazy by telling them. I said, you got to be joking me. Don't you find it strange that they did not build the capital of Haiti back? yet they can build resorts. What do you think on that?
Wow. Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, I mean, even look at, I don't even know where to begin because it's so deep and complex. But
yeah,
guess what? It's not complex at all because it's right there in front of your face. You know, all
it's
these things
right
are going
there.
On, but we're so desensitized. We sit here watching this thing like it's Independence Day. Remember that movie?
Well, yeah,
we sit there looking at reality like it's the movie. And the best thing to do is put it right there in front of people's faces because they won't take the time to look at what they're looking at, you know?
Exactly.
So,
and that's why, and that's the difference between, I don't know why we don't, now, other groups that you tell this to, they'll be, but when you tell it to the people that it happened to, they seem to don't want to believe you. And that's why I see the cultural exchange because, you know, let's be honest, Haiti is actually, let's do that same thing here. When you said Cecil Rhodes put his hands out, I think they did the same thing over here at another meeting. But we just don't hear about
definitely.
It. We know about Jekyll Island where the Federal Reserve was made, but we don't know about that other meeting they had where they said, okay, Haiti, we're going to keep y'all poor forever, and no matter what they do. And then you sit here and look at what's going on. What do you think about the Dominican Republic and the treatment of Haitians?
Oh, man.
What do you think about that?
I mean, That's the same thing. You know, one of the deepest books, and it's a fiction book, but The Farming of Bones by Edwidge Danticat. And she opens the book with the birth of twins, and one is white and one is black, you know. And there's nothing but a river that separates the two, Haiti and Dominican Republic. But I keep saying the same thing, but it is a repeating island. This is a repeating story. This story has been repeated since the 1500s, since the 1400s, since Africa was divided by that Berlin Council, that we all are suffering from the same mental, psychological issue where we forget that we are branches of the same tree. And that's what's going on in Haiti and the Dominican Republic.
I'm hoping that, see, I'm looking at America being such a strange place, y'all. And I told everybody, I was on Facebook today, and of course, nobody on Facebook wants to answer my questions, though. I noticed when I put down historical facts on people's paper, they have amnesia or have Stevie Wonder idol. They either can't see it, something going on, they can't see. But that's okay.
Yeah.
Because I'm going to tell you anyway what's going on when you live in this country here. I'm talking about right here in America. No one wants to sit down historically and say, how did they get to become a Masonic Republic? And how the hell we don't know about it, because it's very important to your life. And it's your own art. It's from the Nile Valley region is what they practice in another form. Mm-hmm. Why is it that we forgot? Now, we have a lot of information about what's going on. I think we have to. You know, I always tell you, Imolani, I say, you know what? I don't see why we have to stop telling people. Because, you know, you ever watch these shows like you've been on TV, Rush Limbaugh. You ever see how what's the biggest thing that say people like? Information.
Mm-hmm.
So I tell people what you do is awesome. You're giving information through music and through your own, through arts of singing and art. You keep giving it, sister. Keep giving it because the word is what's going to emulate into the minds of people. The more we tell them the truth, it'll just like they taught us a lie for 400 years, we got to start saying truth for 400 years because it may take that birth. I tell you all the time, you have to keep informing our people regardless of where time we is and how things is. May look, but there comes a time when you feel that you ever felt so discouraged that from what you've been doing, you've been down, like, man, the journey getting rough. You've been through that?
You know what?
Thank
God I grew up with a strong, conscious community who told me there is no time for I'm too tired. You know,
that's
they
right.
told me no matter what, whether my revolution was picking up the microphone and singing Peculiar Fruit, a modern-day version of Billie Holiday's Strange Fruit. You know, whether I'm doing it through music and soul or my African dance or through educating young people or right here on the radio with people, there's no such thing as tired. We got to keep fighting until our freedom is real.
And I think the freedom is starts first in everybody. You got to be free in your mind as well to even take on the mouth. Your mind has to realize, y'all, filter. I tell people every day, including myself, Olani, I say, I'm brainwashed. So somehow, by watching all this technology, and I have to kill that brainwashing, y'all. And so you got to say to yourself, you got to cleanse that out your mind. Tell yourself, I got to stop being brainwashed. And if you tell yourself that, y'all, and I don't care what kind of language, you will find yourself becoming more aware and you won't be as frightened or so alarmed when you see things. You'll be able to read it right there. Oh, I know why they're doing that. And your own mind, though, I don't need to worry about that. They're not even really going to war. They faking. Y'all ever see a movie called Wag the Dog, everybody? Anybody ever see that movie called Wag the Dog out there? Wag the Dog was a Dustin Hoffman movie where they faked a war. The Bosnian War, it was in a backstage of a movie theater. They faked it for the president. It's called Wag the Dog. Y'all go get it and look it up. You'll be kind of very tripped out because they can make things look a certain way. And we'll believe it that we can't do things because the media makes us believe that they, you know, they're powerful. And they are powerful, but you know what? Guess who works for them? We do. If we ever tell ourselves enough, if we ever say, hey, man, I'm tired of doing all this wicked stuff for these people, and you know it is, it wouldn't be a day. They not the problem. I got a show I did, if you get a chance, download it. I called it out, Psycho Narcissist, where I'm going to use it simply, and you tell me how you understand. Illuminati, you know, everybody ain't going to be the Illuminati. So let's get out with that. That's going to be a certain small percentage of the group. But what the Illuminati does, it webs itself out to smaller branches. Now, when they web themselves out to smaller branches, they got to hire people like us, you know what I'm saying, middle class. And from that group right there, that middle class, that middle group, that is the group that keeps everything in place because that's the group that wants to be somebody because you're somebody. So you will do what this person do because that's how they're getting us to do this. They're getting us to do this through money, y'all. Now, you've been around quite a bit, around a lot of people. What's your definition? I tell people now money, which I have known it to be gold and silver. In these countries that you in and you've seen, you know how much it is for like one, what last country was that so I can make an analysis? What were you at last?
The last country, Puerto Rico.
Okay. Well, you know, I think their money. Matter of fact, no, you can't. We can't judge Puerto Rico.
Same
in the U.S.
Okay, France.
Yes.
I used to live in France.
Yeah. Yeah, because and they money different too. But I'm talking about our area here. You've been to Trinidad. Trinidad money takes a lot to make our money.
Yeah.
You know, for some. So you can see that with the exchange, they working hard in some and you hard just to get like $1,000 buys what? $1,000 their money buys a TV here for $250.
Mm-hmm.
That's because we don't understand that exchange. And you see, we don't understand the exchange they're doing to us. Do you ever think that we would ever come to a time where we would, you know, we need to stop buying, we're not smart. I don't say stop consuming until this thing over, but we're not smart consumers. You think we're not smart consumers? Buying things that you see us buy all over.
There was somebody in the 1950s was when they made a big shift into how they decided to market products. Or before it was, that's the reason why, you know, before you buy a car, it was built to last. And there were small companies who were establishing their name. But in the 50s, they came up with the idea to have a branding, and part of the branding was to create an insatiable thirst for whatever the product or service or whatever was. So instead of making things to last, they make things that look shiny and brand new and convince you that you need the newest new, even though what you got is kind of new. Think about cars. After the third year, you're ready to trade it. After 30,000 miles, 20,000 miles, your car is not good anymore. Your phone. I got the iPhone 5S. I just found out they're coming out with the 6. My phone works. It surfs the internet. But I have it's the same concept of what was done in Haiti, where they were doing cassava flour before, but they came in and subsidized the rice. So now they got an insatiable thirst to keep up with this idea of what it means to be, you know, in the now. So the same thing happens all throughout the world. What you have works just fine. In fact, in some ways, it's better to be a farmer, to be a person living in the country with 20 acres, you know, and have something that can be passed on for years. But then you get convinced that you need to pay $1 million for a 400-square-foot loft, which really means a bedroom, a big oversized bedroom, you know? So you always trying to keep up.
And that's where they're killing us through consumption, especially in some of the countries. But let's talk about, because I do in all genres, but rap music. Now, in these countries in Latin America, South America, they really look up to the rap game. I know everybody, if you go on these videos and you watch the hip-hop in other countries, it seems to be almost like hypnotic. Everybody knows the same look, the same. What's your take on the rap game out here?
Oh man. The only thing about it is, I got to say, rap, or what we call hip-hop today, is a lot different from, like, you know, when I used to steal my sister's tapes and she was listening to Public Enemy and when people were wearing Malcolm X hats and things like that. A prime example is when you look at African movies. I know a lot of our people like watching these African movies, you know, like the little ones that you could buy in the store and stuff like that. Now, they have traditional home movies, which I like. But now you see them coming out with things called Beyonce 1 and Beyonce 2. And you go places, and you could always tell somebody just came here to the States when they're trying to sag, and they don't have that sag down just right yet, you know? that the culture that people are taking on, first of all, with the sagging and stuff like that, is prison prostitution, you know? Because brothers would sag their pants in the prison to say that they're available, you know? And but this has been deemed as hip-hop culture, right? Or, you know, part of rap culture and things like that. But what is it subliminally doing? Because everybody knows this comes from the prison and homosexuality in the prison. Now, I don't know if I'm going too into whatever, but...
No, this show, honey, you're on Blog Talk. This Blog Talk is much different than regular, so go with it. We don't have restrictions. But you're on the right path. I'm going to say this. Mm-hmm. You're on the right path on how this culture rap game is going. Now, I even watched, you know, you got Haitian rappers, Mexican rappers, so forth like that. And I notice now, even when you notice the game mentality is still in rap. Your music genre, which I love myself, is that neo-soul, that spiritual sound in music, that melodic bass and that drum. You know, to me, I would think our people would, especially mature crowd, would embrace this music more than they do others. But let's take the night crowd here. We don't really have a neo-soul nightlife. What you think about that here in the big city of the MIA?
Nah. Here, well, maybe in pockets a little bit, but if you find it, you come and tell me, and we jam all night.
Yeah. You know, because it used to be like that. I would tell anybody. We used to have a group called True Flavor. We would do the poetry. It seemed like that just waved away. It's like something happened between 92 and about 2000, and we were jamming with that. Just the poetry, they had the Punani poets used to come down here, and we had a South Day poet. And all of a sudden, when the rap became real, you know, the real Trick Daddy and all that, I like those beats, but it's just like They wiped it out. And now musicians get paid less than a DJ. A DJ can make more than a whole band. What you think about that? I know you've seen that. No one likes to hear live music, it seems, to me.
I'm just living here in Miami, it falls back into the time era of like, and I'm going to go there, the time period of Uncle Luke Campbell. Luke Campbell is a very intelligent man because he knows about business. He's a businessman. And I found out 2 weeks ago when I went to a jazz lecture in the WDNA gallery that Luke Campbell was taught production from the jazz community.
Hmm.
And, you know, unfortunately, he took the production elsewhere, and we know where. So, you know, he really brought down, he degraded what is called hip-hop here in Miami. He made an extreme degradation of the music, of the true essence of the hip-hop music. And then to top it off, he then created this movement that comes here every year, and it's a disaster, in Miami Beach, which in the beginning was called the
Black Urban. Black Urban. It's Black Urban Weekend. Black Urban Weekend. Go ahead. Finish that. We'll jump in there. I'm going to go to Akilah about Atlanta. Go ahead.
Well, that is now. That's what it's called now. But he brought it up as Hip Hop Conference Weekend. Okay?
That's right.
That was a disaster. So, and also, what I see in Miami is a hell of a lot of talented groups, because we all are very, you know, it's so segregated, but yet you'll see these bands, and in the bands, the music that they play is amazing because the band members are Colombians, Puerto Ricans, Cubans, Americans, and they come together and they bring all of their flavor into the compositions. And it just, not even New York has the type of music that we have here. But then what happens? We have, and I'm going to go there, we have gangsters in this city that does not let us grow into what this city needs to be mapped out as high standard quality music. We are in the map for music, but for booty kind of music, which has been brought about by J-Lo and has been brought about by Pitbull. So this is something that because we're so segregated amongst each other in the art world here in Miami, that's why, and because of the gangsters that we have, like Emilio Estefan and Gloria Estefan, which is like Miami is Gloria Estefan, and it will never grow up from her. You know, that's why we don't grow, and we do not have that neo-soul to bring about here. I have heard so many artists wanting to bring about neo-soul, and they've even tried it up in Hollywood, you know, up in Broward, and for some reason or another, it doesn't work because we don't come together.
Let me go to Atlanta, because now Akilah, that's another big city. What's the population of Black Latinos? In your estimation, I mean, you don't have that accurate, but what you see, is there a lot of Latino population in Atlanta?
I would say maybe 25 or 30%, and up in Norcross area, that's pretty much where they dominate. It's not like I'm not very familiar with the music here in Georgia. It's not like we're back like in upstate or in New York where it's pretty diversified. Here in Georgia, it's like more segregated. You know, our Panamanian sisters, they pretty much come in our area for the for hair. But it's not like we grew up. We kind of intermixed with Puerto Ricans, we pretty much consider ourselves one back at home. But here in Atlanta, it's like they don't connect like that. But
here we go again. So let me ask you this: now you're in Atlanta, and she was in South Carolina. We're talking. Say again?
North Carolina.
North Carolina. And you see two deaths. Now, these are considered, even though Miami is very southern, right at the bottom, these are two real southern states. I mean, Confederate flag type states. And you notice that even now, the population is pretty, you pretty much don't have no contact with Latin music whatsoever then, Kiva, right?
No, I don't. I mean, I've dealt with them in the business. The only business was dealing with the houses. My good friends are from Costa Rica. I hope I'm pronouncing it right. And
right.
I deal with the Hispanic community dealing with their houses, and my Costa Rican sisters do help me with the interpretation. And we create a friendship through work environment. But for the most part, it's very segregated here in Atlanta.
Now I know that to be very true across a lot of these states. Now you see where I'm getting ready to go full circle because you mentioned something earlier, Sister Omalani. You said about you having some Moors in you, which would be more in Spanish means black, correct? Okay, now I want everybody to listen who are on this line or who are going to be downloading this or who are going to be later on listening. Those who are in the Moorish belief system about here in the West, Noble Drew Ali, which I have a lot of great respect for, before he laid his body into that earth, he said a few things. He said, first, it'll be new Moors coming because the old Moors won't see the vision, they'll fall off. Meaning they will never be able to organize things. They will never be able to get things right, which is pretty much where they're at today. Secondly, he said, you need to learn one language that I suggest you all learn. This is what he told the Moors here in Chicago and all over this country up in the north. He said that language, now hardly none of us speak it, though, would be Spanish. That came out the mouth, Honorable Noble Drew Ali. So all of you who are Moors and are not speaking Spanish to say I believe in Noble Drew Ali, I suggest you look that up because I was in shock. Now, here's the thing. The reason why I would think he would say that, what makes a lot of sense to me, I just told everybody that population is very huge with Africans. And who brought him over here? She said Cristobal Columbus. That was Queen Isabella and Ferdinand. That's where the Moors were fighting. So it makes sense, don't it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Makes sense.
I got something I wanted to add to this. But it goes back a little bit because the question you were asking before was about how live music is not used as much. You have a DJ who could get more than. Okay, so the type of music that is real popular now is called EDM, electronic dance music. And if you watch music videos, I'm going to take it somewhere that might seem way in the clouds, but you know about...
Go ahead.
You know how people
right.
can hypnotize people and like with a flashing light. There even been some music videos they had to take off of television because kids were looking at the TVs and having seizures after looking at this. Remember that
That's
music.
Right.
One good thing about music that makes it spiritual or that makes it whatever is the vibration, you know? Like music emits a spiritual... telepathic vibration as you're doing it. Now, if you have a live band, that's coming from nature, natural heartbeat. But you can program anything into a computer, you know, pulsating sound. That's what electronic dance music is. It's a pendulum, like a
that's right. Yep.
Yeah.
Temple. That's a temple of your heart. Now, I'm glad you said that because you, well, we connect, everybody connects. Now, that makes a lot of sense because electronic music, the way they have it today with that big, they had a festival here, everybody, in Miami, if I don't know if you're across the country. It was huge. Huge. It was called Electronic Something Week. A week ago. I'm talking, they paid millions of dollars. They were more violent than Urban Beach Week. They trampled people.
Mm-hmm.
Listen carefully. They trampled people here.
Mm-hmm.
Urban Beach Week, all we do is get shot. We don't do no tearing up. We just get shot for some reason. Unarmed. So here's a group that had electronic music all day long. I mean, flashing lights. They were so crazy to get in. They trampled up a security guard. Tore down a fence. And you know what they said? They just thought about maybe we should not let them do it. But they brought in so much money. It was unbelievable. So y'all know what? Now I got my Haitian brother. My Haitian brother in the house. I got him on here. And I know when he was growing up, he had to hear us ribbing on. He had to hear Black America ribbing on him. Especially if he had on a daishiki on and going to school with flip flops. Go ahead, brother. Go ahead. Brother Luck, you out there?
Hey, what's happening, brother? Hotep.
Hotep, what's happening,
Hello.
Man?
I'm good. Well, I mean, yeah, I came and migrated to the area in 82. But I grew up in predominantly Puerto Rican, Haitian area, mixed called Wynwood. But when I went to the schools like in Dunbar and the inner city, as far as like Overtown and Miramar, that's when I counted a lot of the African Americans. And we got rigged a lot in terms of, you know, being Haitian. But me, I was born in Bahamas, and I never been to Haiti, but my parents are Haitian, so I still spoke Creole, but I had a Bahamian accent, so I had a different type of prejudice, you know.
Yeah.
But
you see how that works?
I
mean, you know, now me and you get along, because me and you, we brothers like that. But we talked about this a lot of times. Do you see how... Just to say how this psychology at work, I would want us to sit down. We can get cultural brothers. If y'all can, you two sisters can organize, Melani and Malika, organize, not a bunch of people, just some people who got sense, and we sit down and do a presentation of what happened to each one of us, and I guarantee you we will psychologically see that we all went through the same thing. That spell will start to get weak. Because it was like, see, we don't really see us going through the same thing. That seems to be a problem here. And that's that called that, y'all remember that show we did called Scientific Management, how they had scientifically managed us. She said about the 50s, that's when they did the scientific management about us going from automated working into just doing the same job all the time, repetitious. And so they did this. Now, brother, let me ask you something. You've been around. What is it that you see that we just can't, we speak the same language with Jamaica? Haitian speaking, what do you see? And we have sex together. Oh, yeah, hell yeah. We get down all the time. But we seem to can't get past to the economics of working together. Why is that?
I think there's still a promotion of isolationism amongst the communities where it's not promoted amongst the different communities to engage each other. So, and that's pretty much what the powers that be kind of like, you know, harp on and they promote. And the cultural stereotypes on both sides, on either side, tend to permeate when we stay within those isolated, you know, communities that you find a lot of the different islanders find themselves. And it doesn't help the situation. So there's no considered effort to kind of really bridge the communities economically, because we stay within that comfort of just being amongst our own, and that's been the problem, especially amongst the African communities of all the diaspora.
Yep.
So that's our biggest problem, I think.
Well, let me ask all y'all this, because I really want to bring this up. Immigration, y'all heard me talk about this the other day before we opened. They are now getting kids off the borders and putting them in the camps as we speak. They're run. Now, this is a population that is brown, pigmented. Some have straight hair, some have nappy hair. When they come over here, now it's going to be legally now. Where do y'all see, when you see about 5 to 50, I'm going to say more, I'm going to say about 25 million people off the border will probably just say, bam, and it's going to probably be more than that. I'm probably being conservative with the numbers. Where do you see the mindset of people watching these dark-skinned brown people coming over who speak Spanish just like you, Imelani, and you, Malika? Y'all going to be mad at them too, don't you think, if they take your job? What y'all think about that?
I can never look at things like that. I think that's such a negative way. I mean, I wasn't raised with that mentality, so I don't understand it, you know. I don't understand the they at all, you know.
Well,
now,
but I'm going to ask you this. Don't think of you now, because, see, many y'all are conscious individuals. That's why we have this conversation. But when I see, y'all know that each one of y'all communities have their own mindset, especially here in Miami. The Cubans have a mindset. They go to the Versailles and they do their thing. I'm sure the Puerto Ricans have. What do y'all say when, and I'm going to make an assumption here. I'm going to show you how I found this out. One day I called a Puerto Rican person, a Cuban. They went berserk on me. They went off.
Yeah. Those are the Cubans.
Well, as a Cuban, I'm going to let you know straight up how I feel that we are going to look at them as a Cuban. And I'm not a hypocrite, and I'm way, okay, because I confront my people. They will call them Indians. Look at them Indians coming here. We have given them the leeway. Really? You have given them the leeway? Yeah, that's what they will be called. You know, these racist, you know, Cuban people, that's what they will look at them as.
Because I see
it. That's the problem we have. And that's the issue that we have here in Miami. We have the issue of the black Americans looking at Haitians and saying, look at them, and look at them, boom, boom, gaga, you know? They call them like, they do things like that. And then you have the Cubans looking like I'm a Mexican. I'm un indio. It's an Indian. That's an Indian. Who do they think they are? You know, this is very sad. This is something that's very sad. And in my people, it's very hypocritical, even more within my people. I don't know, Milani, if this would occur, but within my people, right, it's very hypocritical that we know we have Africa in us, and we'll go to the Bembe, and we'll go to the Yoruba gathering, and we'll dance up a storm, and we'll tell the high priest, hey, tell me what's gonna go up in my future, but then we have the daughter, and the daughter likes the black Cuban. No. Don't look at him. He's black.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? What is that?
In Puerto Rico, there's a joke, and people say, ¿Y tu abuela, dónde está? Which means, your grandmother, where is she? You know, like, you looking at me and you calling me black. But where's your grandmother at, you know?
Hold on, let me get another caller in. Let me get this, 9240. You on the line?
What's up,
question.
Can you hear me?
Yes, hotel.
What's up, brother? How you doing? I want to say greetings to everybody out there. I'm listening to everybody and the stuff that's saying. Thank you, everybody, for the comments and stuff. I've just been sitting back just listening. And, brother, this is the fact here. Just listening to the diversity, the differences, and I'm hearing people about how they're clashing with the music, with the cultures, and, for example, you got Cubans, you got Haitians, you got Puerto Rican, and I've heard Bahamian Nation, Trinidad, just a few names. This is how damaged that we are, brother. This is the fact here. This is how damaged that we are. That even, okay, you take the Cuban community, for example. we are so damaged that is why they tangle this web so well. They know that it's going to take some serious, serious work to untangle this web. And by that time, they're going to hope they can do as much damage as possible. Mm-hmm. You have the Cubans of Caucasian descent, and you have the Cubans who are of African descent. They don't even get along with one another sometimes because of the color differences, because of the color differences, because of the conditioning minds that they have. And they all, some of them grew up in the same country. You have the same thing with the Dominican and the Haitian. It's the same damn island. It's split by a freaking border. It's the same people. But because one side was colonized by the Spanish, the other side is colonized by the French. The French didn't like the Spanish at one time. The Spanish didn't like the French. So here I am now reflecting my master's madness because my master didn't like one another. Mm-hmm. We have so much work. Mm-hmm. This is how far we are from getting to where we need to be. We got to get over these little obstacles first. We have a lot of work to do, brother.
We're going to have to bring in, and y'all tell me what y'all think. I think Miami would be a prime place. I'm trying to somebody, y'all making noise, y'all. I'm trying to get everybody online, but y'all can't make noise. It echoes. Y'all going to have to realize we're going to have to come together. Now, we got a diverse group right here. If we were to able to utilize what we have, this mindset, and go to others, Colombian, you got black Colombians, you got black Nicaragua.
Mm-hmm.
Now, most of our areas down here, the sister said earlier, we are agricultural people. We should not have to worry about Publix. We should start having dialogue with these people, our peoples, because those of you who speak Spanish, we need y'all to help us to learn, to understand, or translate to us what is necessary. If you know some good people that have got a farm that wants this, y'all need to introduce us, because language is the key. My Haitian brother, y'all tell me if y'all not seen this. See, I'm going to tell you this happens to me all the time. Y'all tell me if it's going to happen. I could be in a room. Y'all all start to speak English when we first get together. When somebody comes in there that y'all identify, and I'm the only one who's speaking English now, y'all will jump off into speaking Spanish. And I've seen it even with my Haitian brothers. If I'm the only one there and they get together a bunch of them, they will talk Creole. Now, I don't know how y'all feel about that, but don't y'all think that is first it shows that you don't really have respect for the person who's in that room to say, let's keep it all on the same language. And because y'all have that language upper hand on black America, do y'all think that's y'all playing card? And I'm y'all talking for the people, not you personally. Y'all talking for the people. You think that language is a playing card for those of us who may not know how to translate what y'all saying? What y'all think about that? Because I've seen it.
Yeah, I think it is. I mean, I've been guilty of that in my younger days with fellow Haitian brothers. And sometimes it's not always used for the negative. It might come off that way sometimes, but you can find that. But again, I guess without the cultural sensitivity type programs where we can engage with kids at an early age, it'd be hard to fix that because it's only become like a habit actually and going into an adulthood. It's retreating back to a comfort zone within your community. It's almost like an added comfort more so than it is to make the American or the English speaker feel, you know, uncomfortable.
And culture and identity.
Go ahead.
Go ahead,
sister.
Culture and identity is such a complex thing. That is one of the things that has caused division between us. Remember I was saying earlier about somebody look and say, oh, you think you better, oh, you think you whatever. Yeah, we still got to have, be mindful. But sometimes I slip into Spanglish because it's my culture. I slip into Spanglish and I don't even think about it. Or when I'm in pain or when I'm having an intense emotion, it's natural for me to go into Spanish. It feels more comfortable. But, we got to be mindful of who's around us, too. But we also can't think oh, this person is talking
yeah.
about me. Oh, this person think they better. It's our culture.
Well, that, right.
It, I am a Latina.
Right, right. And
I can't be none better.
That's right.
And
I think
I would
like.
Can I say something?
Go ahead.
As a Black American, what I've experienced is I go to the Panamanians to do my hair, and what I notice is when you're sitting down watching television, I noticed that there were light-skinned, white-looking people on the television show, like the talk
mm-hmm.
shows, soap operas. And I said, you know, I was sitting there watching, and I said, do you guys have any color people, you know, darker people? Because they were all Black. They all looked just like me, my complexion, my hair type. And I said, why don't I see any of those type of people on your television shows? At least here in America, I mean, you know, we do have some Black shows. They told me they didn't have any Black-looking people on the television show. And the next thing that I just wanted to comment, I was one time in the hair salon, the young older lady forgot to put conditioner on my hair, so I had to remind her that, you know, you have to put conditioner in the hair, and she didn't want to do it. So I brought it to the attention of the owner. They started speaking, Spanish. And I found
Spanish.
That to be disrespectful because
yeah.
of the fact that I had an issue and I could not engage in the conversation. So, and then sometimes when you go get your nails done, when you have a problem. So I think that I know that it is part of you guys' culture, but at sometimes I think that they intentionally speak their language, when, especially when there's issue and confrontation, and I do get offended at times.
Mm-hmm.
But I do notice that. I don't know. I would love for you to, Olami. I don't know if I pronounced your name right, but I'm definitely enjoying you, wonderful sister. But my question to you is, when you watch some of these shows on television, do you get offended that you don't see any, you know, Hispanic color actress or actor?
I'm glad that you asked that. Yes, of course. In fact, there's a campaign two sisters are doing right now. It's online. I have it on my Latinegras page. But they're doing a campaign so that they start bringing more people with some color, with some melanin, you know, on these shows.
Yeah, because there's a lot of them.
And who are not slaves, who are not cleaning the house and things like that. In this century, there should be more evolved roles of African peoples on there. But, yes, it's a great offense. And it's not just there. You won't think the system is bad in America. In Latin America, Black people are not in the history books. You go to school, you learn about Columbus and white folks. And Black people were slaves,
yeah.
and that's it.
But, you know, that's why I say we – go ahead, brother.
I just say that, once again, it's the African-American community, you have to realize that at one point you were the beacon to pretty much all the diaspora. And somehow that torch was lit, you know, was taken out. Most of the civil rights leaders and the militants, the islanders, were basically paying attention to that. And going back to my youth, I think it was really a tragedy that a lot of African-Americans did not take the chance to maybe try to experience the other cultures and learn the language to engage the cultures. But you find a lot of African-Americans retreated back to their community and didn't really want to really befriend a lot of the cultures, and that was a source of friction as well. I remember coming up. I think I was more engaging and befriending more African Americans than it was them trying to befriend me as a youth coming up. So that was an issue. And some of the most powerful leaders I looked up to were mostly African Americans at the time that were doing the militant struggle. So a lot of African Americans, I think, kind of forget that, really. You're in a position of basically being a guiding light, but at some point, I think you just kind of the ball was dropped. And, of course, yeah, cultures are going to have their differences in terms of just the mere fact of being of a different culture. But the beacon of light historically has been the Africans here in the U.S., but over the past couple of the decades now, it's been a torch that's been pretty much, kind of burning out. And it's a tragedy because I think the African Americans had more, I would say, gusto to go and challenge the status quo, and that was the history legacy that they were building. But somehow it got lost, and really, a lot of the islanders in diaspora looked up to African Americans and there.
With our studies, we've been finding out, and you as well. These are the type of talks we're gonna have to have. We found out, and it could be proven easily. We had Harry Belafonte. This is his name, Kwame Ture. There were a lot of islands was infused because our struggle was the same. We were tired of the same thing. But what happened, and I'm gonna tell you, and y'all have to take it and look it up. So y'all won't make it think I'm. They knew they had to pay that culture game. So what they did was, we didn't make the civil rights program. It didn't work. It didn't work out for us. It got usurped as it passed up. What they ended up doing was pitting us groups against each other because they knew the immigration would be a serious thing. And I'm going to tell you how they did it, and we got to wake up to it. When they started letting people come over, they did it systematically. They said, okay, we'll pour this country. They'll go to school faster. Now, a lot of island people go to school, college. They go, once they get here, they go straight to college from wherever they're at. They've been pushed to go to college. We have too. But you have to realize with Black America, there's something that happened. Black America got industrialized. We became a middle class society.
And hear me out when I say this, but part of what happened is integration. Or the facade of it, they integrated
the
us in law. Yeah, but it's not that we need access to things, in a unified way. But what it did is make it say, oh, so I'm not one of them? Okay. So then, just like how you were saying earlier about they are taking our jobs from us. Remember back in the days, it was Caribbean people cleaning people's houses, West Indians in Brooklyn and places like that, those who the housekeepers are. And in today's time, is mostly affiliated with Latinos. And with the Caribbean people were saying, they are taking our jobs. So that was the first wave of us and them, us Black Americans against these West Indian Caribbeans. And in today's time, it's us versus now we're looking at linguistic difference. It's always going to be something we're going to use to say that there's a difference. But the truth is, when we go down to the core of it, what we have in common is Africa. We all Black. We went to different places. We didn't create these borders,
right,
but we live by them. So, and that's
right.
The problem.
But
they have divided
and
our
we gotta break.
Psyche.
That's right. Now we broke these. What we're doing tonight here, we're breaking the spell amongst ourselves and those who are listening. Spell broken from us. So we can all get together tomorrow and really put together. But we are strategizing for the next generation, how we're going to present this to them, because what needs to be said and done, education, because of the lack of based on English teaching the islands, most of the islands got taught by the English. Our education, believe it or not, here is German. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not, German is America's.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and then young,
so
other
English
people.
Language.
Yeah, Haiti. Haiti is getting France and so forth. So these European countries have given us psychotic education. And because we go to colleges that they have deemed as high standard, we go to those places and we forget to go back to our homeland or to create a better living for the people on the island or people on these countries. And America, and I keep telling people this, and I'm going to keep stressing this out, America is not what we all think. America is for the division of people. Always have, always will be. When it tells you what they're planning to do, and when it says multicultural, they are talking opposite. When they say segregation, it has never left. It has never left, everybody. Segregation has never left, and we need to understand that. It has not went nowhere. The most segregated hour is Sunday at 12 o'clock when everybody's in their own different churches. So, right there.
That's right.
Now, if we, the only thing that's going to make us get together is economics. Each one of us know that she goes to the Panamanian. The Panamanians, here is what? I think here in Miami, the hair people is the Arabs. Now.
No, the Dominicans.
Dominicans, yes, the Dominicans. Now, the Dominicans,
who
that's
I've what I was going to say, the Dominicans, you're right. The administrative family.
Dominicans. Mm-hmm. The Dominicans now, I'm understanding. See, I'm friends with everybody. See, I get everybody's history, and I listen to everybody. And if you believe it or not, when we all together, the different group, we all figured it out. We all have figured it out. Because to stay in power, they must make us all look different. I'm not saying when I say they are coming, I'm trying to get y'all to see the propaganda that they're going to use that the people are going to fall for. The people are going to fall for. See,
yeah.
They've been using it since German. We'll blame that group for our problems. We'll blame that group for our problems and appoint that group out. And us being simple-minded people, we'll say, yeah. Yeah, they're the ones getting all the, because I showed you one time, I'm going to get everybody mad right now, and you won't even know. I had a list of countries that get free. I had a list of nations, and Malika seen it, and I'm going to tell you what it said. I ain't going to name it because I don't want nobody to get upset. They said this particular group comes in through immigration. They get 7 years of free housing, 7 years of daycare, 7 years of legal representation, 7 years of not having to pay taxes, and they get two checks, one for the spouse and one for the... Now, if I name that group and you see how they live...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You're talking about the Arabs, right?
No. This is a Latin night. This is Latin night. Yeah, now, so if I was a... Yeah, this is Latin night. Or the Caribbean now, Afro-Latinagers tonight. We are going to see how they can use this. You can see how they can use this now. And I'm trying to show y'all, we got to be smart enough to see the trick.
Are you saying the Latin group get these benefits? What group get these 7 years all this benefit?
Yeah, there. It was in the University of Miami. I had to show them, like, the University of Miami did a study on aid of that immigrants get here. The Haitian, how they get anything. They were the lowest group to get anything. But there's one group that's already rich now, still rich, and they get almost everything. Now what happens is they can make people get very upset, and I'm trying to tell people, this is by design. And I don't blame those people. You know why I say this? Because this is by design. Because I'm going to tell you something. Most of the people that come here are coming ignorantly to alleviate the oppression that they live in. They live in poverty. So they leave in their poverty to come here. And what happens is they know what groups to give money to. So when you are Black American and you can't get Section 8 and you can't get welfare, the maximum, and you can't get the maximum in food stamps, and you can't get the maximum in other things they got, social services, and you see another group getting the maximum, I'm trying to tell you that's done design. That's done by design, y'all.
Let me tell you something. I know which group you're talking about, okay? And that group is my group. And within my own group, okay, the Cuban exiles, they complain about that group coming here and getting everything because they feel that we are the ones who came to the United States, and we did. Because my parents came, I came in 68. You know, there's four types I'm sorry?
But it's not your fault. It's not your. I said when this happened, this from the government, the United States so-called government. I remember this, and y'all knew after civil rights, they said let's give them. Now we thought, but we did not. See, we got to start teaching people the history of America. We had to go through. For them to get here, I want to come here, get here through the blood, sweat of a prior generation of people.
Yeah.
So why do you think they gave them gave them more? Is it because of their complexion?
No, it has to do with a treaty that happened between the United States and Cuba.
Well, I think Jimmy Carter passing some policies during the, I guess, the Mario Beaufort areas. It was almost like the policy towards communist Cuba. It was more like to show favoritism and show the incentive to kind of make. Yeah, I think under Jimmy Carter they got more benefits, they got more advantages, but it was more of like a political ploy against communism. So that's pretty much what I think that pretty much jump started the whole thing. Now, naturally, you give anybody an advantage like that, it's not taking anything away from them. The Cuban community pretty much took advantage of it and exploited it to their benefit, rightfully so. You know, it was given to them. So
rightfully so.
Why
that's
not?
What I just said. Rightfully so. That's what we got to understand.
Yeah,
y'all,
but we're not. But let me point something out because I'm Cuban, okay? And there, like I said, there are four types of groups of Cubans. You have the first before the exile, the first Cubans that came here before 59, which were discriminated as much as the black people, because when Miami's the dirty South. When that group of Cubans came here, there were posters in front of houses that said no colored, no dogs, no children, no Cubans. These were the first ones before 59. They knew how to speak English because they were educated and so forth. Then you had the influx of Cubans that came after the 59, and that's where the treaty came through between the United States and Cuba. Okay, and it is by design. I do believe that it is by design. And then you had the Mario Boatless, and then you had the Rafters. Okay, now...
Right.
Because of this, that they're giving all these opportunities and all that to the Cubans that are arriving now, the exiled Cubans are complaining because they're saying that that's their money, because when we need, let's suppose we need assistance, we don't get it, and we've been here longer working and busting our ass and building, Miami, so to speak, in our own set of whatever community, right? And then they come and they talk bad about this country while they're getting all these assistance. And we're like, what? So
that's a natural evolution. You're going to have those who...
Hey, brother.
Oh, go ahead.
Can I say something, brother?
All right, go ahead. You go, and then I'm going to finish up with. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
What we're dealing here, and we have to be very careful with that. When I asked that first question about, for example, about languages, let's go back to the languages. People of African descent, let's go back to the continent. If you go to continent, there's no other continent on the planet that's more diverse as far as speaking different languages and different dialects.
Right.
There's over 400,000 dialects. And a matter of fact, it is part of our culture and part of our heritage of African descent to speak more than one language. It's
mm-hmm.
a common thing. Why they've taken it is twisted around and take it back is to make it as if. So we have to be careful not to get caught into these games that they're playing. What we're dealing here with is different levels of conditioning. They have so many conditions that our condition is conditioned. They have so many layers of condition that we have to be very careful. We have to take it to the root. See, what we are doing here tonight is very good, but we have to get a little deeper and get into the roots with this diversity because there's still some uneducation here. We need to be educated in these things, not to be caught up in these things. Our brothers and sisters from the Caribbean and in Latin America versus the brothers and sisters here in America. We have to understand something. The brothers and sisters here in America are the ones that are in the belly of the beast. So that means that they got it worse than anybody else. And they manipulate and condition certain things and tell that when this other person come over here, because it's your language, he thinks he's better than you. He's taking away your job. He's doing this. Let's go back and look at something. Who gave him the job in the first place? You have to stop letting him manipulate. We have to work. We have to watch their tactics and how they come, and we have to counteract those tactics, and that's how we're going to beat them. We have to start handling that web.
Okay, but then you're doing it now. But you're doing it now, but see, you got to take this conversation here and expand it to people that you deal with, because we all of us can see the web. I don't get upset at nobody, Cuban or not, because if I was an individual and if they were to give me my reparations, I'd be rich. But this is where we at. It's not their fault.
They themselves that are receiving it are not even realize that they're being part of the plan, which is to destroy them right there. They don't even realize what's going on. You understand?
The biggest mission of COINTELPRO was to make sure that the Africans here in the States never bond with the Africans in the diaspora and the continent. So we have to always never forget. I mean, they pretty much put it out there. That was their goal, and to maintain that the Africans here never develop a bond with or join with Africans in the diaspora in Africa. So that's a game that's always been in play, is going to remain in play until we decide to change those rules.
That's right.
And again, Africans, Americans here have to also understand that they really are the beacons. And really, I would say it's not to take anything away from them, but the ball has been dropped in a sense because, again, a lot of these diasporas are looking at Africans Americans here. You gave the world hip hop, and look what hip hop is doing to the world, the youth of the world. You know, to show that if that was to be managed properly, you can pretty much be a force on your own and creating the environment to facilitate it.
To make it better.
But
let me see.
And also the Caribbean and the diaspora have to be aware of that as well.
But that's where we at now. Let me get ready to say. Now, sister, we got to take it off. This is going to be the last part. I'm going to leave it with you because you were the guest. I appreciate what you brought tonight. Beautiful, beautiful discussion. Was heavy. But we got to take it further, and I hope we can work together. Also, you know, we're going to work together with the music, but we're going to work together and try to put a conscious effort out here along with your documentary and take it to a level where Miami going to have a discussion. It's going to be known to all who participate. So could you leave us with some words of wisdom before you depart from OU Dry Bones? Give us some words of wisdom.
All right. I guess I'll hit you all with a poem. This one is called Sister, Please. A sister came up to me and said, while rubbing her fingers through my halfway done head, you sure enough got some good hair, and you a red bone, 'cause your skin is fair. Now I remember when I was young, I had hair way down to here. I'm looking at the sister funny, because now her hair doesn't go past her ears. Now, when I don't have no perm, you see, I got these waves. I'm Indian, you know. At least that's what she says. My granddaddy's white, and people must see it. 'Cause whenever I walk past him, they always ask me if I'm mixed. Now, this sister is black as onyx, with hair to the likeness of a lamb. She looked at the ground and kick the dirt, then ask me another question. Is you Puerto Rican? Asked me with a smile. I looked at the sister deep in the eyes, and then I thought for a while. Are you ashamed of your thick, broad lips, your curved thighs, and your well-rounded hips? Our people are white as snow or black as slate. We come from every color of the rainbow with a history that is great. Melanin gives us protection from the sun. It can be found in our skin. Our hair curls up really tight to give our heads oxygen. We are descendants from kings, warriors, and queens. We real bad people. Do you know what I mean? So I'm feeling all good inside, 'cause I thought I had the sister thinking. And she looked up at me and said, "So you ain't Puerto Rican?" And that's it.
Thank you, sister. Y'all heard it. Latina Negras, Sister Umalani, I appreciate it. And we are going to get together, and we're going to start doing some things. So, everybody,
yeah,
the Dry Bones Connection is now about to disconnect. Oh, ye Dry Bones, until we meet again, good night.
Right.